I've got two guests with me that are at different ends of the spectrum. I've got one person who's just recently sold their first few policies from in the home, brand new, newly licensed. I don't even know if he knows how to spell his own name yet. And then we got someone who's been a steady SEAL team earner and crazy doing well with us. So I got two people. So let me introduce them real quick. So Aaron Castillo, do we have you on the line? Do we have your line opened up?
Yep, that's me. Am I coming through?
I am. All right. So, Aaron, I told people I don't even know if you know how to spell your name. How do you spell your first name?
A-A-R-O-N. There's the
That's not
the
Aaron.
Girl.
That's A-A-Ron. You're A-A-Ron.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, you get that a lot. All right, that's good. All right. So, Aaron, tell everybody what you was doing before you found our program.
Oh, I was a teacher, a high school English teacher for 8 years. Been subbing lately.
Okay. All right. But substitute teacher lately. And when did you get your license?
It's only been about a month.
About a month ago. Okay. And what prior one-on-one sales or in-home sales experience did you have prior to joining the Alliance?
Oh, I had absolutely nothing. Everything was very foreign to me.
Okay. So I want people to hear that so they can hear. So I've got someone who's coming with no sales experience on one end of the spectrum, okay? And this is intentional because Aaron's been doing some things like following some of these secrets that we're laying out here, and he's learning them. And so, Aaron, how many families have you sat down with using our system so far?
So far, I've only sat down with five. But
five.
I wrote,
okay.
Yeah, out of those five, I sold three policies.
Okay, so written three. Now, did you sell policies in three different homes or two homes and then, like, sold two apps in one of those homes?
Three different homes out of five.
Three out of five. Okay, so he's hitting 60%. Now, let's be real. It's a small sample set, but we're also talking about a guy who has no prior sales experience with us. So we're going to come back, and I'm going to weave some of Aaron's thoughts into this, okay, as he's heard some things. So you got someone's brand new. This is an unscripted call. I've not given him a script to read from. We're going to be asking him questions on the fly, okay? On the other end of the spectrum, I've got my buddy Katrina Gustin out of Florida. Katrina, do we have your line open? Are you on the call with us right now? Katrina, Katrina, Katrina. I'm going to have to sing if you don't speak up. And it's going to get ugly really fast. Do we have Katrina's line open up? There we go. I see her there. There we go. Katrina, we got you there.
I've been saying hey, 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 hey.
There we go. Hey, hey, hey. All right, we got you now, girl. All right, Katrina, tell everybody what part of Florida you're from.
I am from Orlando, Florida.
Okay. All right, Orlando, and how long have you been with the Alliance?
I've been with the Alliance just over 2 years.
Just over 2 years. Okay. And what did you do before you found us?
I was a claims adjuster before I found you. Recently displaced into the unemployed world.
Okay. So was that like a sales kind of job? If you're a claims adjuster, are you selling people stuff when you're doing that?
No, unless you're counting, you know, selling attorneys that they're not getting any more of a settlement than they're wanting.
So you just said no a lot with a smile and a pretty face?
Pretty much.
Okay.
I got the checkbook.
Okay.
Ha, ha, ha.
Okay. All righty. So, there you go. So, all right. So, we got some background here. Now, Katrina, just let's give some people some kind of quantify your experience. We introduced this program called SEAL Team about 15 months ago. And so, out of the 15 months that we've had SEAL Team in existence, how many of those months have you hit SEAL Team?
12 in a row.
12 in a row, 12 months in a row. So someone who's solid, who's learned our system, and who stepped up to hit it. So someone who's good in the home. Katrina, I don't know if you've tracked your numbers, but in terms of like in terms of your, like, your what I call your help ratio. So if you sat with 100 families, like, what percentage of those families would you have helped? If you had 100 sits, how many of those families would you have helped based on your current track record?
80, without a doubt.
80%. Okay. So we've got someone that's brand new that's helped 3 out of 5, and we can't say he's a 60% closer because it's not. It just wouldn't be fair to put that expectation on Aaron because he's still learning. Okay, but
yeah,
for someone that, but for someone that's new, it's like, I like the fact that he's showing, hey, this works just by, like, not arguing the system, but following the system. Okay, the next thing is the next thing we got is Katrina, who's helping, who's learned how to help 80% of the families she's sitting with. Now, Katrina, do you remember early on, like, we go back 2 years, so January of 2016, how were you doing at helping families at that point? Were you, like, at 80% right off the bat? Were you more like at 30%, 40% in your first month or two? What do you remember about that?
Honestly, it's kind of a blur. I don't remember. What I do remember, it was over 50%, but beyond that, Mike, I really don't know. I think I blocked it out.
Okay. That's fair, and that's okay. So, and we're not going to make up numbers if we don't know them. We're going to kind of give you a sense of where things are at. Okay, so I know that Katrina has learned to master several of these secrets that we've talked about and several of the ones we've been teaching Aaron as best we can as he's getting up to speed. So I've learned from my buddy Alex Fabian several key things about selling and helping families from different sales experience that we've drawn from taking our ATM and working with that, from interviewing other agents across the alliance. And so we've learned a couple of things. One of them is to, like, have compartments of the sale that we lock in, certain things that if you don't do them, the submarine is going to take on water and it's going to go hit the bottom of the ocean and everybody's going to die. Okay, so as we talk about some of these 8 things, we've really tried to list them knowing, like, that if you don't do them, it's a mess. So we're going to get into this. So if we talk about our guests, So, Katrina, we'll see how we're doing here. See if you even know these, because I haven't written these out. Some of you might know. But, Katrina, what's one of the first things that you know you've got to get right, the most biggest thing to having a discussion with people as you're walking into the house? What's one of the biggest things that you know you've got to do?
Number one is make a friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we call it bond and rapport. Sometimes we call it getting to know them. Some people say making them smile. You can call it different things, but fundamentally, if we don't have their body language to where it's open, listen, I said their body language. If their body language is closed, then they ain't your friend. You know? Aaron, as you've gone into some homes, what some of the things either you've noticed, because you've heard us coach you on making a friend and the bond and rapport before you walk in, what are some things that you've either observed where maybe you've made a friend or maybe you struggled to make a friend, or just anything that you either done or noticed maybe you didn't do in a couple of your first appointments with us?
Yeah, one of my first couple, the husband and the wife were both there. Tried to get him to pull up a chair, but he was standing there by the table. His wife was sitting. He was standing there with his arms crossed. And I was thinking, I already know this is not going so well. You can go ahead and pull up a chair. No, I'm fine. So that was a big red flag to me, even though I didn't know much. I knew that wasn't good, though.
Danger, danger. Houston, we have a problem. Okay. All right, so I like the fact you set that up. So was that one of the ones that you sold, or was that one of the ones that you didn't sell to?
Did not.
Did not. Okay. So, Katrina, talk to me about some of the things you do initially to make sure you're locking in the sale. What are a couple of things that you're very intentional about doing?
Are you talking about
building
just
the bond? I'm sorry.
The bond
I'm sorry.
Rapport?
Yeah, in the bond report. I know I said lock it on the sale, but in the bond report, what is it you're intentional about doing, whether it's as you walk in the house or as you're getting people to the table, what are some things that you know you're intentional about doing?
I'm always intentional about noticing something good about their home or their area. And sometimes there's not a lot to choose from, but you've got to be it's got to be real. Like, you can't just say, oh, yeah, you have beautiful carpet. I love the color, you know, and maybe they have a patch of dirty brown carpet, you know, that's not really pretty. They're going to know that that's fake. So probably one of the biggest things is complimenting them in a real way, in a sincere way, and making them smile.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, a sincere compliment. If you have a situation like where, you know, Aaron noticed, he said, hey, man, this guy's got his arms crossed, won't get his wife to the table, won't sit down. I seem to have a problem. How do you tackle something like that? What's kind of going through your head? What are you trying to do to steer this away from, you know, hitting this iceberg dead on?
I would say most of the time I'm pretty bold when I have a situation like that. Because I know that there's a difference between somebody standing at the table and somebody in the other room watching TV. One of them is just not interested. The other one is going to be a major roadblock. So I can get the guy in the living room interested real easy. Just sometimes I'll just holler and start talking to him from wherever I am, and then he'll amble on in and sit down. But the guy crossing his arms, most of the time, I have to be a little bit more bold with. You know, I'll be like, hey, dude, am I that scary? Like, what's the problem? Come sit with me. You're making me nervous. Anything like that that will kind of shake them up a little bit and make them realize that they're making me uncomfortable too. Either that or I'll tell them a story. Yeah, some people don't like me coming into their house, and I tell them, geez, I don't know why you're so scared. You could lock the door and murder me and nobody'd know. You know, maybe I'm the one that should be nervous. You know, just really shaking them up and being bold about it. Because if you are, sometimes that'll shake them out of their stupor or their meanness or their, you know, a lot of times it's the wife who wanted you there and the husband didn't. And so he's being very... I wouldn't say vocal, but adamant about how much he disapproves. So you got to really shake it up.
And I think, you know what? Some people say, well, I might say something, and I might offend them. Okay, when their arms are crossed, they're already offended. Or they're testing you. And this is like a thing. Now, if you can do something to make them laugh or smile, I know a guy... He'd be sitting there when a guy was, if a guy came out on the step and had his arms crossed, like, hark, who goes there? You know? And he'd step down one step lower than to allow the guy feel like he was in charge. And then he'd say, dude, hey, do you have a dog? And the guy would say yes or no. And if he said yes, it's so, well, that's good. But, you know, you really don't need one because you're scary enough in person without him. And the guy would kind of be taken aback and smile a little bit because he knows, yeah, I'm trying to be scary. Or if he said, no, I don't have a dog, I say, it's good. You're scary enough without one. Feed his ego. A fed ego is a happy ego, a little bit more malleable. You know? Shoot, he might be crossing his arms to protect you from talking to his wife because she probably said, don't you let her come in here and be talking about none of this. And he knows he can only put up that front for so long. Then you kind of make him smile. He'll forget that he's, like, trying to defend his wife, and she might hear you talking and realize you're kind of nice. And next thing you know, we're having a real conversation. Katrina, how often does it happen that you can't get somebody to move by thinking of something bold? And bold doesn't mean rude or mean. It just means bold, like something like slightly out of your comfort zone. Maybe self-deprecating humor. What else? Katrina?
Most of the time, I would say most of the time, I'll get them to move with that. If I don't with the first comment, I will continue to try. I mean, if it's a lost cause, I'll know it after a while, and I won't even try to quote people like that, to be honest, because they're not listening anyway.
Mm-hmm. They ain't hungry. Don't you go in the kitchen and cook them a meal because they're going to throw the food back at you.
It's going to make it 10 times worse.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So this bond and rapport thing, getting both parties to the table, making sure you're getting both of them talking, people need to be acknowledged. If the husband's talking, Katrina, and the wife ain't said nothing, what do?
I turn around, automatically start talking to her. And a lot of times, you know, I make a joke, you know, even when I'm talking to him on the phone, booking him appointments sometimes, you know, I'll say something very silly and, you know, make the husband feel a little bit small, which is funny to me, about how the wife's the boss. And so I'll say something about, yeah, you know, you're doing all the talking, but I know how this is going. I'm talking to her. I know in my house, that's the way it works. And she'll kind of start laughing. If she doesn't, I know I went the wrong direction.
There you go. Okay. So many appointments are won and lost before you ever get people seated at the table. And having an awareness is huge. Okay, this is like one of our first secrets. All right. The second secret. See if Aaron's picked up on what the second secret is. Aaron, what's the second most important thing? Once you've got, like, the kind of the love in the room flowing a little bit, or you've gotten the ice broken. In fact, here's another question. I want to go back to that. Here's a question I've gotten. Justin Carson, so I've seen use this a lot, and he looks at the couple, and as they're at the table and they're starting to break the ice, he asks them, who was chasing who when y'all met? Who'd y'all meet? And then it's, who was chasing who? And typically there's a little look or a little giggle. And when you hit that moment, where you're kind of smiling when you ask, you kind of give them this like look, I kind of like, I'm almost like smiling. I kind of got this like little wry smile, like, who is chasing who when y'all were dating? And most of the time, one of them is going to, they're going to nod, and one of them will start telling a little bit. Do you want to tell them? Do you want me to tell them? You're reconnecting them to their love when they first met. And this is important because this is love insurance, not life insurance. Well, I know it's life insurance. No, it's love insurance. If there ain't no love in the room, ain't nobody going to move. If they just had a knockdown drag out before you got there, you need to help reconnect them and have a little bit of healing, because he might be thinking, that witch, I ain't doing nothing to protect her. He might have been feeling that 30 seconds before you opened the door. Got to help reconnect them. All right, let's jump into our second secret. Aaron, what's the second secret, the biggest thing we got to do once we get people at the table, acting nice, open body language, liking each other a little bit? What's next?
Find the pain.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Uh-huh. Some people say the pain, the need, the hurt, what's wrong, what are we trying to fix? We put all sorts of words in there, but you get the idea. What's that mean to you to find the pain, Aaron?
To get to the specifics of really why you're there, not just I want to keep the house, but specifically, you know, do you want to keep the house? Well, why? What would you do? Would you have to move in with your mom? Would you be living in the basement? Would your kids have to move to a different school? Specifically, what would happen if, you know, what is the scenario they're trying to avoid specifically?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I think you got it. And what are some of the things you've already learned to ask them, Aaron, while you're there? What are some of the certain things you've learned to ask that maybe it didn't occur to you before you got started with us?
Mm-hmm. When we're going through the financial information, they might say that, oh, I have some money that I can use to take care of the mortgage. Well, is that going to take away from your retirement? Is that going to deplete your savings? Or is that money that you have specifically for the mortgage? You want to make sure that you keep the house. Well, why? What's so wrong with that? Why do you need the house? You know, what does it mean to you? Things like that.
Mm. Okay, so, and is there a page that's helping you identify some of these incomes? Is there a part of the ATM that really helps you with this?
I go ahead, when I'm asking the medical and financial questions, I actually just use the green sheet. I go ahead and fill that in.
That's right, the green sheet, my favorite part of the whole process. Oh, my gosh, it's like, be still my fluttering heart. It's like, did somebody pay you to say that? Oh, dude, that's a $1 million answer. All right, so the ATM has that page that says your financial picture. So it gives you the questions to ask. And as Aaron just said, the green sheet, which is not an actual ATM document, but something you can put next to it or stuff them in your ATM so you've got them all the time, is where you can write the answers down to the questions that come up in the Your Financial Picture page. It's genius how they thought of this. It's like they were meant to go together, like peanut butter and chocolate.
That's right.
Katrina, you tracking this?
Katrina. Sorry, my mama was beeping in. Sorry, I had to decline that call. Hey, yeah.
Okay, you're good.
I'm tracking. That's my favorite page.
Okay, so Katrina, what are some of the things that you've learned to do in this why or pain or need phase? What are some of the things that maybe were tough for you to know to ask at first or where you had to learn to ask?
Well, I think part of what I do a lot before I try to get into the why, because I don't want to be generic about it. I don't want to be asking them the same thing that I ask everybody. I really wanted to tune it to their situation. So, for instance, I sat with a couple the other day whose two adult children lived with them. One was married. There were three grandchildren that lived there as well. And the only people who were contributing to the household bills were mom and dad on very limited incomes. So the issue in this particular case is, do they have money to contribute? Is there enough if something happens to you or something happens to Bill for us to pay for the house bills? And where would you go? You know, and I really sat down with them and spent a lot of time beforehand, and this is what I do with everybody, is I look at their income first. So I'm just gathering data, and I'm trying to find out how much they both make. And in the same breath, I'm talking about how much would you get to keep if one spouse died? Because really what we're looking for is what their income is going to be like, and is that going to pay the bills? What are your bills? How are you going to pay your bills? And unless you really sit down and kind of do some reconnaissance, you know, going behind the scenes and trying to figure out what all they owe and what they don't, you won't really know what to ask. I mean, you can ask, you know, will Susie stay here if you die? You know, well, if you knew before that Susie makes $10,000 a month and this guy is not the breadwinner, then you probably wouldn't bring that up.
Yeah. Yep. This is where the rubber meets the road in trying to help people see it. See, if you can ask these questions and let the people answer it, it's almost like they know they want to buy, but by asking this, they clarify in their own minds why they need to, and we don't have to hit them with a sledgehammer and knock them unconscious to get them to buy. They're buying out of the observation that they need it. Now, it's possible you might have a reread, someone that's touched that don't see it. But typically, even that person, if we ask them the questions nicely enough, they'll start to wake up. So this is big. So what's your income now? Well, Katrina, let's say Les died and got, bam, hit by a truck. You know, something happened 2 months ago. He's been dead, gone, buried. It's now 2 months later. What's your income look like now? I know we saw what it looked like before he died, but what's it look like now? So his job income, is that still there or is it gone? He got one of them jobs they keep paying him when he's dead? No? Okay.
Nope.
He got one of them Social Security thingies? What about you? You got one of them Social Security thingies coming in? You got one of them pension? No, no pension. Ooh, do you get to keep both his and your Social Security, Katrina? Katrina, do you get to keep both your Social Security and his Social Security when he dies?
Phone malfunction, sorry. No.
Okay. We're going to get you a new phone for Christmas.
I know. I would like it too. Thank you.
Okay. All right. All right. So, Katrina, how does it work with Social Security? Some people on this call do not know this. How does it work? If one of them dies and they've been married together to each other the whole time, one of them dies, what happens to the Social Security?
They lose the smallest Social Security. So if she's making $700 a month and he's making $1,000, when he dies, she'd get $1,000, lose the $700.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Okay. So that's big. Some people don't realize that. They should, but they don't. All right. They might have one of them pension thingies. What happens when someone dies and they got a pension because they used to work for some big company, whether it's GE or Ford or Toyota or I don't know, Bank of America? They've got one of them big, you know, companies been around forever, and they got a pension. What happens to the pension when they die?
Well, that can go one of three ways. Either they lose it entirely, which is very common, or they keep half of it. Or they keep all of it. That's rare, but I've seen it. So you've got to ask them very specifically: do you keep half of it? Do you keep all of it, or do you keep none of it? Because a lot of times people don't even know.
Okay.
And they'll just guess.
All right. So now we found out what their incomes are, and if income's going to stay or go. And the three main sources of income are job, Social Security, and pension. It's good to know which ones they have and what's going to happen when they die. Pretty simple when you think about it. If you never thought about it, it might sound complex. So if you're like a brand-new agent, you're listening to this call, or if you're brand-new and we forward this to you to listen to before you go on your first appointment, now you know. Ain't no big deal. Don't be scared.
Nope.
All right. In fact, just the fact that you're asking the question, you're going to look 10 times smarter. You'll think, oh, he's a financial genius. She knows about Social Security and how this thing works as good as we do. All righty. So just by asking these questions, you look smarter. Okay. So now, Katrina, now we found out what their income streams are, and we're still on this Your Financial Picture page. What else are we looking for that could impact their need for life insurance?
I'd say the biggest thing for me is health.
Well, before that, like, so we know that if an income stream, like Social Security or job or their pension is like a stream, what if they have like a reservoir or a lake?
Aha!
Pond.
Savings. Savings and other life insurance. Sorry, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Okay, here we go. You can be as clueless as Katrina at moments and still go SEAL Team 12 months in a row. I assure you.
That's right.
Okay, And Katrina is overall not clueless, but we all have our moments, including me. So, all right. So, Katrina, how do you ask about the ponds, pools, reservoirs, and lakes of money?
Well, when you're already talking to them and you've built that rapport and they know that you're there trying to help them, I mean, it's pretty easy. I'm asking them, okay, so what is there to bridge the gap? Something happened to him. Do you have any money set aside? Do you have life insurance? Do you have savings? Do you have, you know, annuities, funds that you have set aside to cover this?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I can be pretty blunt about asking.
Okay. Give me an example of having to be pretty blunt. Why would you have to be blunt?
Well, the reason I'd have to be blunt is because at this point in time, I don't want to know a roundabout answer. I really need to know this stuff. Whether or not they have money set aside or they have money in another life insurance policy will make or break my sale 100% of the time. If they've got other life insurance and I don't ask about it, that's going to be an objection later on down the road 99% of the time, because they're going to say, oh, well, I don't need that. I have life insurance. And I could have gone over that, and I could have helped to figure out where that fit in if I'd have known before. But at the end of the sale, once they already say that, it's hard to come back from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. See, now it becomes an excuse that they're using because you didn't get out on the table at first. That's so
exactly.
Huge. We have to get this out. Oh, I got life insurance. Oh, really? Well, that's awesome. You might not need no more of this mortgage protection. Let's take a look and see. Let's verify what you've got. Oh, I don't know where the policy is. What do you say when they say that, Katrina?
Oh, that's cool. Do you know who you're paying every month?
Oh, I reckon I might. I can't remember. Honey, you remember who we're paying for that life insurance? She might, I don't know. What do they say, I don't know again?
Check bank statements, checkbook.
Oh, well,
online
I don't know
banking,
if we've made any payments.
Pretty easy.
I don't know if we've made any payments to them. All right, so I'm going to fast forward to this because we've got other resources on how to identify policy data, but if they have a policy, you want to get it out on the table. Or you need to call if you're during business hours and get the policy details. And if not, bam, fam, to come back. That's really important.
I promise.
We can spend more. Go ahead.
From my point of view, I promise more than half of my sales would not have happened had I not asked those questions and got the information on the other life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a huge, huge, huge thing.
Okay.
If not, it increases
my
premiums.
Yeah. I had somebody with a client the other day, and the guy is acting all proud because he got himself a $1 million policy. We're like, well, how long is it for? He says, well, I think it's 20 years. And the person's 40 years old. I'm thinking, okay, is there any reason why you went with a 20-year? It's like, because you got 3 years to go. He's 37. You only got 17 years left. I said, why'd you go that? Well, it might be a 30-year. I'm like, well, it might not. Well, do you not even know? I said it much more nicely. That's what I'm thinking inside. For a smart man that got himself a $1 million policy, seems all proud. You don't seem to know some of the key details, do you? Now, I don't say it in that tone, but inside, I'm like, you fool. So this is why we smile and laugh a lot. This is why we got to be nice, because we got to get them to move. Okay, so this is all part of the why, the pain, and the need. And then if it is a disaster and you can see there's nothing there, Katrina, what are some of the questions that we ask them? Like if it's an obvious disaster to us, what are some of the questions you ask of them when you realize, holy crap, 2/3 of their income goes away when he dies, and they got like 37 cents and 2 food stamps when he dies. That's what they have in savings.
That's probably one of the biggest things that will sell a policy is I just let it sink in, number one. I'll let it sink in for a minute, like, so you're running tight on money now. If something happened to your husband, how tight on money would you be? How would it look then? Because they're going to say, mark my words, we don't have a lot of money in the budget. And I want to go ahead and try to pin them down on that and make them say it out loud, not my idea. Like, you think you're tight now, something happens to him, you're going under a bridge, dudette. It's bad. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to say that to them. I want them to realize it because it's more powerful if it comes from them.
Okay. This is all massive stuff. We've only talked about two of the eight secrets. These two are huge because if you don't set these right, it's like building a house with no foundation. Or we'll just put some straw and some sand down and maybe it'll hold up this big house. We want to move fast. Because you're going to get people, you start talking about some of the things in this first secret and second secret, and your client's going, well, just show us the price. Relax, cowboy. We're going to get there. In fact, this is a fast way to do this. If we can get this figured out, we'll make sure we get you the right price, get you the best price. You sound like you're interested in saving money. If you care about price, let's make sure we get you the best price and the least expensive one by doing it this way. So, all right, managing that. Now, Katrina, we get into the health side. And the health side, I'm going to hit this one, or I call it qualify. Qualify. And we look at health. Here's five things to look for. Medications, surgeries, treatments, procedures, and hospitalizations. Medications, surgeries, treatments, procedures, and hospitalizations. Ask those five things. You'll find out most about anything that's wrong and bad happened to them. And pay attention to the bad stuff first. If they said they had a heart attack last night, not much else matters. We don't need to worry about their toenail that's ingrown. Right? I mean, so if they said, if they've already had the near-death thing as the first thing they tell you, it's kind of like, as they said to Mrs. Lincoln, they said, well, aside from everything else, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? Her husband just died. He got shot in the head. She ain't thinking about the play. Once they told you I had a heart attack last night, not much else matters in terms of our options. They're pretty limited. But let's assume that everything's normal health-wise. There's a few little things, maintenance-type drugs. You're not sure. If there's a drug, you don't know what it's for. The name of the drug don't matter as much as why are you taking it? That would be a good follow-up question. Well, they told you about a procedure. Well, I had one of them oopta-noopta-plazzy thingies. I said, okay, great. Don't worry about how it's spelled. Ask them, why was that for and how does it affect you? Or I'm disabled. What caused your disability? What keeps you from going back to work now? What ails you? These are things that are important, not just the name of the condition or the fact that they have a situation. Nicotine. Tell me what nicotine and tobacco products do you use or have you used? Don't ask them if they're a smoker or not. Nobody wants to be labeled. Don't label them. Just say, hey, tell me, what nicotine or tobacco products have you used? We'll figure out what rate class to give them. The next thing is their driving record and then their criminal record. Tell me, how's the driving record? Any criminal background issues? Let's get those out on the table now. Don't be surprised later. Katrina, any other big qualifying thing that I'm missing?
Height and weight.
Yeah, that's a big one. Height and weight.
Most of the time, you don't need to ask. You can tell by looking at them. Ask, obviously, but most of the time, you'll know.
Yeah. Yep. You'll know if we need to be, and if you're not sure, well, develop a sensibility about it. Okay.
One thing I do want to say about that real quick, Mike.
Yes.
Is instead of, that's not a point where I would start talking about products, especially if you don't know. Because if you get that 5 foot, 300 pound woman who is not going to qualify for a term, and you've been talking about how great Forrester's term is, you're going to have a problem because you're going to have told her about something that she'll want and cannot have because she won't qualify for it. So don't start talking about products until you know all this stuff and you know from calling that they're going to qualify for it reasonably based on what they're telling you.
Yeah. In fact, I'm like, Katrina, why are you talking about product? I didn't bring up product. Who brought up product in this discussion? Who authorized you to bring up product on this conference call, Katrina?
I know what my new agents do. As soon as they get that information, they're talking about products before they even start.
Yeah. All right. So now, Aaron, let's see if you can nail this fourth secret coming up. Aaron, what do we do now? What's next? We know we don't talk about products, so Aaron, what do we do now at this point in the appointment?
Okay, so we just did number three, qualify. Okay, So the next step then would be call from the home.
Call from the home. All righty. Now, Aaron, what if you don't have cell phone reception and you're in the client's home? What should you do?
Can you just ask to use their phone?
Oh, that's brilliant! Nailed it! I like it. Some people haven't figured that one out. So you heard it here first. Okay. All right, call from the home. Borrow their phone if you have to, or a neighbor's phone, or if they have Wi-Fi, you can use WhatsApp to make a phone call on Wi-Fi if you did not know that. There's resources for the thinking man or thinking woman that wants to win. Okay, call from the home. Aaron, what do you say when you call from the home?
When I call, I say I'm just going to call the office to get a second opinion, and I really talk you up. I say my buddy Mike, he's our resident guru on products. I have an idea of what might work for you, but he might be able to find if we can save you a little bit more money. And okay. They love it.
There we go. Beautiful. Okay. So that's huge right there. And if you can't get me, if you don't know who you're going to get, you can just say, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get one of our senior underwriters on the phone, see what they can do. I want to make sure I get the best. I want to make sure the option I'm thinking about is the best one for you. That's my line. And I've used it still when meeting with people recently. I might be calling, like, my buddy Mickey Cruz or Katrina or Joe Dukes or Paul Epstein or someone that knows products that's out there more often than me in case I'm missing a product thing. I'm like, you know what? I got a pretty good idea what's going to work. I want to run this by a senior underwriter, make sure the one I'm thinking about is going to be the best for your situation. Katrina, any tips on calling from the home for you, from your perspective, anything else that's key to just initiating this call?
No, I think I like what he said. The main thing is I would never say anything about upline or tell them you have no idea what would work. That's generally not the best idea. But, you know, hey, I've got an idea of what's probably going to work out the best, but I want to get a second opinion. I think that's the coolest way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That is it's huge. And this is critical because you may not know how all the products work starting off. You may not know how this condition impacts things. We're going to guide you. In fact, you might have done a terrible job of diagnosing their pain or their need. We're not just going to look at their health. We're going to look at what did you assess as their why, and do you have that pinned down. Now, if you don't get the person you're trying to call, your next method, Aaron, what's something you could do if you couldn't get the person you were trying to call on the phone? How else can you try to reach out to someone to help?
Oh, well, there's – I if I can't reach you, I try and call Noelle, or I could use WhatsApp.
Yep, that's exactly right. And what do you say on WhatsApp to get a veteran agent to call you? What's a good thing to put in WhatsApp?
Well, first say that you're sitting with a client so that they know this isn't just a get back to me when you can kind of moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm with a client, need a veteran agent to call me, and then put your phone number and first name in there. Hey, this is Mike. I'm with a client. I need a veteran agent to call me, 911, double urgent, whatever. We'll get someone to help you. Okay, it may not always be instant, but typically we'll get someone that's going to help you. Okay, I can't promise everything instantly, but we're going to get someone to you. We'll send in the cavalry. Okay, because your job is to help wrap up the deal on the first appointment. Some people say, well, I like to go home and come back with options and show them I know what I'm talking about. Well, I think that's retarded personally. Because we have experts that can help you figure out what the option is right there. And I think most people like professionals that can solve the problem right there on the spot. This isn't that complicated. Now, you might think you make yourself look all self-important. I think you make yourself look more important by wrapping up the deal there while you can. Just my opinion based on 18 years of experience. So don't hold me. You know, just I might be wrong. Okay. So we get guidance on what product to use right there. Then the next thing we do is we start to plan which options. And if you're brand new, here's some things we're going to ask you. I think this product is best. Do you have the application for this product, Aaron? You got the PlanRight application with you, Aaron? I think that may be the best option. Do you have the PlanRight application with you?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, you do. Okay, verify. Does it say PlanRight on it? Good, because I don't want him to get the other one and then have it all confused. He goes, PlanRight's not in the Forrester's multi-product app pack, and there's not an e-app for that. I'm like, okay, so Aaron, please ask all these health questions. Let's double-check that and call me back, and then we'll plan the rate. Because I want him to painstakingly, carefully go through each question and make sure we've got that nailed down. So is Eric – I mean, Aaron goes through and asks his clients a question to make sure we got everything nailed down. Then the next thing that happens is he calls me back, and we plan out which level of options to go with. Or if there was a yes answer that blew that product out of the water, I might have said, okay, if that PlanRight don't work, let's look at CFG or let's look at Transamerica. Let's try to pin this down so we know what's going to work. Then we help lay out specifically which face mounts we should show based on the situation. I make sure Aaron has his rate calculator. I'll make sure that he knows he's getting the right numbers if he's not done this before. And I make sure he's got the app on the table. Katrina, any other big things on this call from the home and where we're kind of preparing him to present the options?
Make sure you don't think you can just call one time. I think that's a big thing. A lot of people call once and then we'll try to sell it. And if they can't, they'll just leave. They don't call again.
Yep. Yep. That's a big one. Okay. So now you've started a call. Your job is to call multiple times until we're kind of moving forward if we get stuck somewhere. So now step six is presenting the options. As we present these scenarios or options, my suggestion is start with smaller ones, and it's easier to go up. Because if you start with the big honking $387 a month one, because somebody told you, don't be afraid to show them the biggest one. We'll get as much premium out of them as possible, cowboy. Yeah, that's probably not going to work. But what they need is they said they wanted to cover the whole mortgage. And he's a 73-year-old smoker, and I showed him because he's got 150,000. Well, I showed him the 150,000 smart UL because that's what he said he wanted. Well, folks, you got kids. I want candy. I want candy. Shut up and eat your vegetables, son. Sometimes we have to be the adult in the room and actually feed them what's going to work. And in doing so, we have to show them something that's going to be palatable that they can digest and swallow. So that thing that they might digest and swallow might be $70 or $80 a month. And maybe it is for 2 years of mortgage payments or a quarter of their mortgage or something, which is more than what she's going to have when he dies at this moment. It's going to improve their family's position. And we can talk about how to position that, but the key is start smaller. And if they like it and as you show maybe another option or two that's more, they can now choose to go higher if they want, but let them take you higher. Because one of the things I learned from my buddy Paul Roberts is to say, hey, Katrina, when we come back a year from now and review this coverage, my hope and my goal is to make sure that we'll look at it and you guys will still have it in force, knowing that this is a great starting point. And if we want to add to it or increase it or do something more next year, we can always do that. Guess what I'm doing? I'm planting the seed for the fact that I'm going to do a policy review. And as my buddy Paul Epstein, who wrote 17,000 premium on policy reviews this week, that's a good thing and is good for your business. I love my buddy Paul. Okay. All righty. That's two Pauls I referenced in the same point, Paul Epstein and Paul Roberts. All righty. That's pretty good. So we're presenting options. Katrina, if we have the application out on the table, as we're presenting and maybe discussing the options, what are you doing as you're discussing the options since you have the app on the table in front of you?
I'm going ahead and writing down some information from the application at that point in time. I'm going ahead and trying to see if I can go ahead and get one started, because in the beginning I'm telling them right away that we're going to help within their budget no matter what.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I like to look at them as they're debating the options or talking a little bit. I just look at them and say, so which one of these are you leaning towards? Which one are you leaning away from? Why is that? Yeah, that's a good option. Why do you like that one better? Okay. And so basically what we're saying is Les, when you die, you want Forrester's to get Katrina this check for $80,000, this one here? You think, oh, we're not really sure. But, okay, well, let's keep talking about that. Meanwhile, Katrina, what's your middle initial? And now Katrina will typically tell me her middle initial.
L, L.
Katrina L. Gustin. Okay, so when you die, they're going to make the check out to Katrina L. Gustin. All right, perfect. Les, you got your driver's license handy?
Yep.
I never
got it right
say,
here. You need.
I never say, which one did y'all decide on? Because nobody wants to make a decision. They'll tell you, well, we don't want to decide nothing right now. I'm just asking which one they're leaning towards. Now, something we didn't cover, but Bill Cook did a great job of teaching it, is earlier in the appointment, hey, there's one of three outcomes. We're going to find an option you like. We're going to fill out an application to see if we can get you qualified. We're going to get the method of payment in there. So if we get you approved with that option that you think you like, they'll then start to draft the premium. Or we're going to have it where you can't really decide which option, and you're going to look at me and say, Mike, we just got to think about this. And that's perfectly okay, because we've got to see if the company can approve you. And so if you need to think about it, we're going to fill out the application, attach the method of premium, and see if we can get you approved, and we can adjust it up or down as to whichever one you're really leaning towards ultimately. And if we have to change it, we've got plenty of time to change it, or there's a 30-day money-back guarantee, kind of like when you do your shopping at most other places. So you've got no risk in this. You'll get your money back. If somehow we made the wrong decision, we'll go back and find the next dress or suit or shirt that fits you better. And third, if we're not anywhere close to what y'all need, we'll leave as friends. Came as a friend, we'll leave as a friend. That can be planted somewhere in there before you put down prices, before even you call from the home. That could be something you lay out there. Because now you've set the tone for if you can't make up your mind, oh, perfect, we're filling out the application because you can't make up your mind. That's exactly – it's already been programmed if that's what we're going to do, so there's no shock or surprise. So step six is now completing the rest of the application. I think it's pretty straightforward. I don't even want to spend much time there except just do it. And then step seven is when we go back to the ATM. And, Katrina, what do we do when we go back to the ATM?
Well, we're going to get ERSs. We're going to find what that's for.
ERS referrals. We talked about if we found money that we've already written on the green sheet, as Aaron pointed out. Now we're talking about the possibility of maybe protecting some of that money. I'm not going to make this a green sheet training course, but, again, there's things that we might ask and book a meeting from a meeting with Chris Norris or complete and prepare the green sheet to be submitted. We also might ask them who they know that may want to help us out. And they may say them, or they refer us to somebody. ERS referrals are huge. All that happens when we go back to the ATM. And, Aaron, what do we do? So that's our seventh key, is going back to the ATM. And, Aaron, what do we do last? What's our eighth, the big secret here at the very end before we leave?
Call from the home again.
Call from the home again. But what if I didn't write the application? What do I do?
Still call from the home again.
But what if I did write the application? What do I do?
Still call from the home again.
And what happens if you don't call from the home again before you leave?
Well, you don't know what you missed out on.
You're going to get tarred and feathered at the next hotspot. We
yeah,
boil the tar and we pour it all over you and blow a bunch of feathers on you. Don't do it. Now, some people are like, well, Mike, they told me, I had somebody say, Mike, he told me not to call you again. I'm like, well, whose bloody phone is it? Come on now. Is he paying your phone bill? Besides, tell him it's a security check. What do you say if you got to call him? Hey, Mike, I'm wrapping up with Joe and Sue. Oh, really? What's awesome? Which option do they go with? Oh, they go with the no option. Oh, really? Well, why is that? Well, we might think of something that helps you turn around while you're there. But once you leave, our odds of getting back are infinitesimally small. Like, that means it ain't going to happen. You got to fight for an opportunity to help them do the right thing and be the adult and lead them to the promised land and help them solve their problem before you go. Katrina, is there a limit on how many times an agent should call from the home?
No, no limit. Call as many times as you need to. And one more.
Okay. And one more. As many times you need to plus one. It's like infinity plus one. All right. So these are the eight secrets. This is the special sauce. When you mix it with the ATM and our leads and appointment you're going on is going to help you rock and roll. We went a little bit later, but gosh. I think this is good. I can't wait for y'all to use this. Now that you've been informed and enlightened, let's get to work. Katrina, Aaron, thank y'all so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
No problem. Have a great afternoon, y'all.